Thank you for joining us for Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something and where we cover your pop culture landscape through our geek lens. I'm Ms. Shannon here with my regular co-host and podcast life mate, Mr. Jayton Satia, Executive Director of the Twin Cities Film Fest. Jayton, what is going on in your world? What's going on in your world?
I'm trying to stay warm. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I am warm enough. It's funny because somebody had asked me, and they're a lifetime Minnesotan. They're like, how do you do it? I hate the winter and it's wearing me out. And my answer, because the winters don't bother me that much. So maybe it's because I grew up in Arizona and didn't get to winter for the first half of my life. So I think I still find it kind of, you know, charming is what it is.
You're saying under 0 degrees is endearing.
Correct. Correct. It's like a very novel concept because we didn't even
weird.
Like it was. That wasn't the case. Like, look at what's
happening.
I grew
up in Mississippi and I didn't move to Minnesota till I was 17, 18. Mm-hmm. So half my life here, half in Minnesota and India. It's cold.
It's cold. You could just deal with the cold.
That I learned too. You can put on as much. You can keep layering up. You can layer up. But in the deep south, there's only so much you can take off.
Right.
And then it becomes indecent.
Right. And you cannot do anything about it once it's like, you know, you don't look cute, you know, necessarily with less clothes. You can cute up with more clothes.
No, you can cute up with a lot more clothes.
Right.
Yes, I agree with that. So in that capacity, I am doing fabulous. It's awesome.
Which brings us to our guest geek this week, who never has to cute up. He is one of our most handsome friends. He is our guest geek friend who is on the show quite often and really the only person that I let come on the show without having a specific topic in mind before he is on the show. He is the Renaissance man. He is an author. He's a musician. He's our friend T. Aaron Sisko. What's up? What's up, Taylor? How are you?
I'm good. Shannon. Hey, Jayton.
He's got the best smile. Like, I smile when he smiles.
Right. Here's the thing. Like, everybody should follow, you should follow Mr. T. Aaron Sisko for multiple reasons. If you're not on his social medias, for sure, make sure you follow him on Instagram. He's at Sartorial Saint, which I will tell you this, Taylor, of all of your all your social media handles, that is my favorite one that you have. I think you should change all of them to that. In fact, if that website is available, I think you should get sartorialsaint.com as your website. Have you looked that up yet?
I haven't. It was really tongue-in-cheek, and I just never got around to changing it. Like, a friend of mine, back when I started on Instagram, that was when it was, remember, it was just for iPhones?
Yep.
And mm-hmm. You couldn't get it, and I had an Android, so then I had to work around. I was like, I gotta get a name. And then a friend of mine, very snarkily, was like, well, you should be Sartorial Saint since you hit a bless us. Unsolicited fashion tips. It's like, you know what? I'm going to be Sartorial Saint.
And right.
Just too lazy to change it.
I think you should use that for everything. I think it's brilliant. I love it. It rolls off the tongue. It's easy to spell. Because your website is Black intellectual, kind of, but with no, like, I can't even say, because you have to say all the time, it's Black intellectual without the vowels except for the I. Like, it's just like, because your website is BLKINTL.com. Sartorial Saint would be so much easier if I just got to say, follow him. I think I'll buy that for you as your next birthday present. And then you could point everything to sartorialsaint.com. Your website for your music, TreyAaron.com, can go to sartorialsaint.com. Blackintellectual.com for all of the wonderful books. Because you've been very prolific lately. Over the last few years, you've had how many books come out now? 7 with the recent one, or 8?
This is the ace. Okay. This is my most recent record, mm-hmm. number 8. Yeah.
That's impressive.
Thank you. I'm just restless. And to make it sound way more sophisticated than it actually is, Toni Morrison has a lovely quote.
Yes.
That if there's a story that you want to read, but you can't find it, then you must write it. And so that's whenever people talk about process and all that, that's where it comes from. Like, we're curious, has someone written this, is there a book about this? And then usually the case is no, not really, or sort of, but I don't like the way they did it, so I'm like, you know what, let me try it, let me do this. I have an idea, and nowadays it's very, very easy, or a lot easier than it was even five, 10 years ago to like take your idea, get it on the page, and then get it to the public. And so,
well, I still like applaud you. And we, the last time we had you on the show, we were talking about your autobiographical retrospective, your basically your memoir, Black Nerd Blue Box, the Wibbly Wobbly Memoir of a Lonely Whovian. And so I want to just touch base with that a little bit as well. But your latest book, Rod, String, Nail, and Cloth, an Afrofuturism Mixtape, just dropped. So I appreciate that. I want to talk about that, but there's a couple of things I want to bring Jayton up to speed regarding what's going on with Mr. Trey Aaron, Mr. T. Aaron Cisco, a.k.a. Taylor Cisco, all of the names. One, Jayton, we both need to say thank you to him. I don't know if you have recently, because I don't know if I brought you up to speed on this. So I handle a lot of the live stream events for the Twin Cities Film Fest, right. Taylor. And so I needed some music for that and some other projects that I have. So I don't know if you noticed, Jayton, but some of the music that we've been using during our live stream was provided by our friend Taylor Cisco, a.k.a. Trey Aaron, a.k.a. T. Aaron Cisco. So, like, for instance,
I did notice it, but I didn't know if it was the same Taylor Cisco.
Yes, it is the
same.
That
makes sense. Like, right. Not that your name is too common, but I'm like, there was a little bit of a connection there, and I'm glad you just kind of verified it. So thank you. Thank you, sir.
Oh, yeah, actually, absolutely.
Right. It enhances, you know how it is.
Right.
Little things, maybe music is a big thing, but the customer experience is all inclusive of visual and auditory and the conversation. So having your expertise and your art as part of it means a lot. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. Just happy to contribute, especially musically. That's one of the things that with the current conditions, actually not current anymore, but of the past year, that's one I think suffered pretty heavily, is just live performance, whether it's theater, comedy, music especially.
Right.
Because it's one thing to do like Zoom panels for a convention. It's another thing for even like table reads, and they do like celebrity meet and greets and things like that. And painters can still have digital galleries, but for bands, rappers, singers, poets,
right.
You know, a lot of friends in the scene, they're all saying the same thing. Like it's just any way we can get it out there. Mm-hmm. These past 12 months is just crazy to think of. Yes, thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, I was like one of those things. I'm going, oh, I was looking for music. I was like, wait a minute, you know a musician. Why, why don't you ask him to use his music? So I was very happy that he said yes when we had this chance to do it. And so I do want to talk about your book, but I want to talk to you about a couple things because it's been a while since we caught up. And it whenever we have you on the show, Taylor, that means that we get to have a general grab bag of geek things because there's always so much going on. And we have very few friends that are probably as diverse in the things that we're watching. So if we had had you on, like our last episode, we had our friend Darren Lynch on, and we had, because he is a DC Comics fan, we had a very involved conversation about Wonder Woman 1984. Woo-hoo. And I brought you up because for anybody listening to the show, they are familiar with Taylor, and I know we all have some mutual friends. So, Jayton, I don't know if you saw this. Taylor put up the most glowing endorsement. He wrote like this review of Wonder Woman 1984 when the film first dropped, to the point that I thought they paid him. Like I was expecting the bottom of it to have like some asterisks that said, this is a paid endorsement. I have received compensation for this review. Like he talked like he loved this movie. And I hadn't seen the film yet when I read his thing. So I was like, okay, cool. Then I saw the movie and I can't stand this movie to the point that Taylor, who's a good friend of mine, it made me question his taste. It made
I think that's okay. I think that's called that is what adds the context to a friendship or to a partnership.
Right.
It's the conflicts that add. Again, this is not a conflict, right? It's opinions, and like you love something and I don't love something. That's right. Okay. But the fact that you're able to make fun of it, mm-hmm. make fun of the fact that his endorsement was so over the top that you thought
it was so much.
Then the opposite is that.
I'm like, how much Wonder Woman 1984 swag does he have in his office now?
Did they
send him? How much did they send him? Does he have an invisible jet in his backyard? You know, is that.
Cannon, did you write a review of Wonder Woman 1984? Did you write a review?
I did not.
So if you did, it would be the opposite. And Taylor would be wondering. Taylor would be wondering, where did Marvel come in and tell Shannon to butcher 1984?
Quite so. I appreciated so much that we had such varying opinions on this that during a mutual panel, a discussion afterwards, I came up with a very racially charged panel that Taylor and I should do next year. And it's really, can we get away with it? And I think we can because it's us. So I thought it'd be
funny, right? From an audience perspective, to have, if you guys were planning this dispute on stage.
Right.
But it looked natural. It was like it was happening in the moment. That can go viral in a heartbeat.
I wanted to call it Battle of the Blacks is what I thought would be funny.
Oh, boy.
Which made us laugh. And then we're like, will they get it?
Either with the vowels missing.
Yes. With the vowels missing. We're like, if we called it that, would people get the irony that it was us? Because we're also the people that they always put on the diversity panels, which is completely reasonable and makes sense. I just brought you up, Taylor, because I spoke to our other mutual friend, Jonathan Palmer, who we need to have on the podcast as well, Jayton. I'll set that up. And, you know, we do the rounds on that, and we volunteer to be in that space and to talk about this so that some of our counterparts who do not want to be in this space do not have to. Because they're, you know, you don't have to be in every single lane. Like Taylor and I and some of our other friends choose to be in this space where we talk about inclusivity and diversity and those voices and those stories. So for us to be also on a panel that was called Battle of the Blacks and we just duked it out, I thought was very funny.
Especially if the panel is all of us.
Yes.
Because I've been on plenty of panels or I've sat in audiences where it's all, you know, Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to lots of diversity panels where it was all Caucasian, and that was very interesting.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Just like been a lot of like women in STEM and women in geekdom panels where it's like the only woman is sitting next to me because she was my buddy that came with me to the con.
Right.
So, oh yeah, we can have a lot of fun. And I'm no stranger to so-called hot takes. I'm a big fan of Dolores Umbridge from the mm-hmm. Harry Potter universe. I almost lost my black card because when I first saw Black Panther, because I saw it about a week ahead of the release.
Yes.
For like a fan event.
Mm-hmm.
My gut reaction, my very first reaction. Now, this isn't what I feel anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is just my initial reaction. Someone's like, what do you think of it? This is like 3 seconds after we walked out of the theater, having just asked like, you know what? It was like Thor with better acting because the plot, because I wasn't in like, my rights, but I wasn't in Geek Fest. Like, oh, that was a cool movie, but I wasn't like, he asked me like what I thought, so I went into like film nerd mode and I was like, oh well, you know, it was okay, it was like Thor with better acting. And then everyone's like, what?
What?
Like, oh wait, no, let me watch it again.
No. Anyway, I appreciate that answer though, but I think that sometimes that goes back to the general topic of having the weight of all things on you when sometimes you go into it from the perspective of a fan. And that's how I feel about films. Like, because I also am usually very outspoken about wanting more female-driven, geek-related projects. And so when we have movies like Wonder Woman that I, like, really am at minimum lukewarm about, because I think that the character is so much better and deserves so... they just have not handled it well. And have not handled the character well. And I think that they keep producing trash, but the character deserves better. And so I don't want to, because the same thing, like if we talk bad about Black Panther, when I think my initial response was a lot more glowing than Taylor's were, but I feel like if I talk bad about a female-driven property, it has more weight on it. And they go, see, even women don't like it. It's like, no, the movie is problematic for multiple reasons. You didn't only make it. Like, I think if we look at movies like Aquaman, that was presented through more of a female gaze. I still think it's a garbagey movie. I think it was presented through a female gaze or an attempt at a female gaze when Wonder Woman is not. I feel like it's a movie that has women in it, but it's not sent through a female filter. Because I don't think, and Taylor, one of the things that I talked about on the previous episode is I don't think she acts like what a strong female character would act like in Wonder Woman 1984. And that was my primary problem with that movie, is like no strong female character would see a quote-unquote friend/colleague get physically assaulted and then be like, deuces, see you tomorrow, and not make sure that they made it home okay.
They were barely friends.
But no, whatever. You, I've walked strangers to their car.
You have a good point, because especially with the DC characters, I mean, we've got 70, 80 plus years of storytelling. And so when we move them to those film adaptations, they have to kind of trim the edges and kind of like whittle them down, like mm-hmm. Batman. Like, I like Batman in the comics. The Batman movies are hit or miss, mostly right. because in the comics, one of his first and longest running nicknames is the world's greatest detective.
Right.
Where he's supposed to be brilliant at finding these things and solving clues and going head to head cerebrally. But almost every movie, they kind of just brush through that. They might show a scene in the Batcave where he like does something magic and then, all right, I'm going to go out and kick some ass.
Right.
It's like, so Batman in the movies is like slightly crazy, cool toys, a lot of fight scenes, lots of action.
Right.
So we lose the whole detective angle. We lose the whole like paternal thing, because there's a lot of jokes about him picking up orphans and they get killed, like Jason Todd and Robin yeah. and all these guys. But in the comics, that's fleshed out more, where he's trying to fill this gap and make it so that other kids in Gotham don't go have the childhood he had, which is also kind of a dick move, because he right. grew up a billionaire. Why wouldn't you want everybody to be a billionaire?
Yeah.
But we lose that because they have to trim it down for adaptation. And they're still trying to find it out. Like with right. Superman, they kind of had it in the 80s with Christopher Reeve. They kind of figured out, oh, we're going to have like, kind of like the Super Boy Scout.
Yes.
And then they tried with Brandon Routh or whatever his name was from that one movie. Yep. And that didn't really work out, because that was sort of like a remake of the Christopher Reeve movies, and that didn't kind of fly. And then you had right. Smallville, which was like a different take.
Yeah.
And now you got Cavill, who they're sort of trying to figure out what to do with it.
Right. And they can't decide if he's just Mall Muscles or
right.
Are we going to go dark just to be dark? Right. Yeah, I get that. And so I think that's where I get frustrated, is that we have a film like, and I'm not going to rehash everything about Wonder Woman 1984, but when we have a character that could be more dimensional, and then all they do is lean into the women show emotions and find and are based upon whether they love a man or not, and that's all that matters. And I think that there could be so much more with that character, and that there was so much more with that character in the books. So that will lead me to what I think is the next thing that we'll do, because we just had a whole episode about that, and I don't want to harass everybody.
Do you want to throw out one tiny thing that might not have come in your previous episode? Because there's one okay. thing okay. about both Wonder Woman and Wonder Woman 84,
yes.
which is weird. It's almost like an overcorrection, and this is all okay. just my crazy theory or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in the first Wonder Woman, as great as it was, one of the things that gets overlooked was the platonic relationships between the male characters. That's something you don't see, especially in genre films, but just movies in general. It's not a lot of like, it's usually played up as like homoerotic or actual romance, or it's played off as a joke because they're not into each other that way. But this was just a genuine expression of, here are four men who care about each other. They are friendly. They've gone through some stuff, and they actually show those relationships in a way that really hasn't been done before. Which was weird, because again, that's where my theory is. It's almost like Patty Jenkins and crew were like, well, we don't want to alienate guys, so let's really, really put a lot into the relationship that these male characters have. And then one of the things I didn't like in the first Wonder Woman was like, well, now we're going to shoehorn in this awkward romance with Steve Trevor.
Right.
Because that felt really off. Whereas the four guys, that was amazing. I was like, yeah, I actually believe these are friends. It makes sense how they're getting close and why they care about each other. And the same thing in 84, like Diana and Cheetah, that didn't really make a lot of sense, especially because she had the picture of Edna. But the way that they portray Maxwell Lord, especially compared to the way he's portrayed on the Supergirl series, which is right. a more generic evil villain, in Wonder Woman 84, it's like, oh, he's actually not evil. He's just, at the end, he has no other options. He's got this son. He's a failure. He's desperate. And so you actually understand why he's going to the lengths he's going to. It's not just like, I'm going to take over the world. He's like, no, I want to do this because I want to be all things to my son, and I can't help my son unless I have this. So I need to do this to get this. Now that I have this, I need to do more. And it's almost like an addict, like he's out of control, like just one more little thing, which is, again, a nuanced take on a male character.
I'll give you that.
Really explore.
Yes. Nope, I think
the
that's
main
all
character
fair.
Should have been doing.
I think that if they had the main character focus more on her relationship with Barbara Minerva and the previous relationship she'd had, and again, not shoehorn the Steve Trevor. That's my biggest. When people ask me what would fix that movie, here's what would fix it: take Steve Trevor out completely. Just take that whole storyline out completely. And it wouldn't even take serious rewrites. Like, you could still have here's why she has to use a golden armor. You could still have all these things and not need him, because I find him the biggest problem, and the way that they were, it was creepy. that it was creepy the way that, oh, my dead boyfriend's back in somebody else's body, and I'm just cool with that. The world is on fire. I'm just cool with that. I grew up on this super powerful, you know, around all these amazing women, Thermascara, but I don't support any other women because I'm pining over this dude that died 70 years ago and I only hooked up with once. That's just weird. That's not even, like, even in superhero world, it's just, it just made me crabby. Like, I was watching it and I kept looking for moments to not turn on the movie because I want these movies to do well. And if I hadn't already heard that it had greenlit a third movie already, I probably wouldn't have even said all of that stuff because I would have been worried that I was jinxing the property. Because we'll be honest, you brought up Thor. You brought up Thor. The first two movies, meh. You know, then by the time they got to third, they dialed it in and figured out, here's how this character works. Here's how we want. You know, they had pieces of it, but not really, you know, didn't really push the actors in any particularly challenging way. When I think by the time we got to the third Thor movie, they really pushed on all of them. And that makes sense. So I'm cool with, like, hopefully, you know, we'll hope that I'm gonna cross my fingers for this one. I want it to be better. I always want them always be better. I want, you know, as a nerd and one of the, you know, now I have a lot more nerd friends, you know, when in doubt, you know, and Jaden and I have talked about this before. There's just certain things that we don't try to talk to other people about. I'll just talk to Jaden about it. You know, this kind of thing. Or I'll wait until I see you. We have our friend Will Spotterberry. I have a couple people that I just do that. You know, this is, I have the most nerd friends right now of any time in my life, which I appreciate. You know, I'm used to being as me and in other people being forced to listen to my things. and not wanting anything to do with it and tired of me talking about it. So the fact that I have
mutual,
you now.
It's mutual coming from a nerd friend back to you. Because there aren't that many opportunities. Because I'm, again, with the regular day-to-day, you do your work, you do your business, you do your family, and you're happy and content with how much ever you can be in your life. And there's portions of your being that are not being satisfied. And you, when you find the right group of people or right the individual, you want to be around that individual more and more and more. To build that relationship, to build upon the fandom that you have on, hell, pasta making, if that
right,
is your thing.
Exactly. Quilting, whatever that. It is.
Yeah, whatever it is. And you need that. And I think everybody, that's the basis of our show, is like everybody's a geek about something. Share it. And hopefully we'll get you more people who are also passionate about the same thing.
Right.
And you guys can connect. That's it. Let's build a community together, or at least the opportunity to speak who you are, speak your truth in a safe environment.
Right, right.
Like, I hate this movie. Yeah, it's all safe. This is safe.
Right.
Say what you want. There's no judgment coming our way.
Right. You think
maybe
it's
a couple
great?
Of counterpoints, but no, I appreciate, again, I think I told you I enjoyed the first Wonder Woman more than I did the second one. And it's predominantly because of the codependency that she had on Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, for me, if I am looking at a strong lead, I want the lead, whether it's a alien or a human being, to own who they are.
Right.
And if they're going to lead us as in the non-superhero folk through things, I don't want them to be handcuffed by, again, relationships are not small things, but
right.
I want them to be better at managing relationships and or other things than I am, because I am not, I wish I could control the world, but I can't, but they can.
Right.
They can help. So seeing that was a little disappointing. I do agree. I think if Steve's character goes away from Wonder Woman, it actually makes the film more stronger.
Right.
And then you can dive a little bit more into other characters as well. Give
right.
you that opportunity to dig a little deeper into their personal relationships.
I think that would be an interesting show or an interesting panel for us to do somewhere. And we can set that up because a lot of times we know the people that are putting things together. A panel that was, this would be better without. Like a panel that was all about things,
yeah.
movies that we kind of liked, that if we took one character out or
like
mostly
this.
Out, that would be, yeah, I think that would be fun. It's not that we hate the movie, but something about it took you out of it. And so I'm glad we'll write ourselves a little note And I think that should pop up at one of our favorite local cons here. We, like, the three of us could be on that and
I
just
like
come
that.
Up with
Absolutely.
Series that would be better if we just took, I'd be fine with this if so-and-so was gone. And it doesn't mean that they're terrible. There's just something about it that if they weren't there, it would be so much better if they weren't there.
Oh, that's there's so many properties. Like the Witch or the Vivitch, as we were joking about it. Love Anna Taylor-Joy. Mm-hmm. Love the film until the last, I guess, spoiler for a three-year-old movie. If they had taken out the devil and just left it as a suspense where you don't know if it is something supernatural or if it's just like the overzealous nature of that time period, way stronger. Because once the goat started talking and the cackling and the people, I was like, what the? This was a great movie. Until the last happened. Like 7 to 9 minutes. Like, why would you do that? It's so great.
Right. You know, there's lots of things where you're like, I was with it until. And I think that there's lots of those scenarios where we would be okay with certain movies if they just, and then you added something in there and you're like, where did this even come from? Like, why is this here? And you're just looking around going, I'm done. I've had that happen a lot where I was like on board. And I think it's a lot of times when whoever the creators are create a world, I like when they just stay in the world and that it's, you know, so if they have something that doesn't make sense, we're all in the business of suspending disbelief, right? Where you get very like this only, it makes sense because this is how science works here. And yes, we can, so-and-so can breathe in space. This person can breathe underwater. This person talks to animals. Okay, whatever the thing is, cool. Don't argue with the thing. I try not to poke holes in that. But if you set the world up and then you mess it up yourself, then that's when I get, well, what is that? You know, kind of thing. And I think that there's lots of like, you know, things that we could go, oh, if they just got rid of this person, this would be perfect. So I'm curious to see what we come up with that. So next time somebody asks me to put a panel, we'll put that together. Like maybe we'll do that next year at Convergence. We'll start pitching that now kind of thing because we could do that. Now that I know that, you know, people have learned at last year's Convergence that Taylor and Jayton are not the same people because for until that was the first episode where you were both on the same show, I think. No, we had one other one. I take that back. We had one other one. Yeah, so that'll be fun. So, Taylor, since, you know, and again, we haven't had a chance to talk about this, and I know that you're watching it as well. So we've all now watched, at the time of our recording, the first 7 episodes of WandaVision. I want to have this conversation as much as we can without completely spoiling things, because this is going to come out. This will come out a week after episode 7 dropped. So everybody could get mad at us if you still haven't watched it, if you're one of those people that you can't watch a show, if people have talked about it at all, if you've managed to somehow escape all of the stuff on social media, because there have been a number of things that dropped that people have just wandered into information, because that's the world we live in now. I'm just warning everybody right now that we are going to now talk about some stuff that goes on in WandaVision. Is that okay with everybody? We'll just go ahead and play our little alarm warning here. There might be some spoilers, just warning everybody. Because we have a few minutes. So one, I want to get first impressions, because we have not had a chance to talk about the series yet. So we'll go a round table. If we were going to give it, we'll say 1 out of 5 geeks, 1 being the lowest rating and 5 geeks being the highest rating, how many geeks would you both give it?
I will say, based on the first 7 episodes, it's a 4.
Okay.
It's up there.
Mm-hmm.
Based on, it hasn't been a season yet, so I want to, you know, haven't processed the whole concept.
Okay.
And or the purpose behind the character's choices yet.
Right. Okay.
I think it's very well done. I think it's unique. I think the fact that it is set as a show within a show is very intriguing. Coming at it from a Marvel universe even, that's, again, something brand new.
Right.
That we haven't seen yet. So it's kind of interesting to see them go down this narrative. It's funny because you, when you watch, and again, I watched this particular show with my wife and my son, actually,
mm-hmm.
who's 6 and a half. and we're all getting different things from it. Obviously, she points out all the shows and the decades that are in these episodes.
Right.
Oh, this set mimics this show.
Gotcha. So she's very...
This set mimics this show, or the style of this is...
Oh, they're talking about an homage to X. So yeah. She can do that. That's
and
cool.
And I appreciate... Because I didn't grow up in the United States watching all of those, the classic TV shows here. So, but I know of them, but they're not in the back of my mind. But to my wife, this is an homage to a show that she watched. So I kind of look at it from that lens and it's fascinating. So I'll give it a 4 for now.
All right. That is a fair thing. Okay, Taylor, your turn. Out of 5 geeks, one being the lowest and the 5 being the best, what would you give it?
So I have to kind of split it. I think if you are very familiar with the source material, so either the MCU universe as far as the films go, or better yet, and the comics that they're based on, then it's definitely, I agree with Jaden. It's like, I give it like a 3.5 or 4.
Okay.
If you're not familiar, like if you're coming into it and like you watch the movies, you're not like a huge Marvel fanboy or fangirl. You're just kind of like, I like them. Let's check it out because there's a lot of buzz. I think, and this is not the content of the show per se, it's more the delivery method. I give it like a 2.5.
Really? Oh, okay.
So I've seen all 7 episodes to this point twice now, because I watch them as they come out. And the first 3 weeks, because they were doing this incremental release, even though it's on streaming, you only get one new one per week. The first 3, I was having a hard time. I was like, I'm here because Elizabeth Olsen is giving an outstanding performance.
Agreed.
I want to see what they do with every decade that they're going to kind of like do a spoof or kind of like, you know, tip of the hat to. But there's nothing in the story that was engaging, because that was just my initial take watching it as it was released. And then we got to episode 4, which kind of started drawing things together. And I was like, okay, I see what they're doing now. And then I kind of complained about it to some friends and stuff. And I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to go back and rewatch it in more of a binge format, or like contemporary, the way that, you know, Netflix, they drop entire seasons. HBO, when they have new stuff, they're like, here's the entire season. And so I went back, and then watching the first 3 episodes back to back as sort of like a extended season premiere made it way more gripping. And both my significant other, my kids, they liked it a lot more that way. Whereas when it first debuted, my wife checked out after 15 minutes of the first episode. She's like, I don't know what's going on. I don't understand this. I'm out. Okay. It's not for me. My kids, who have seen the MCU films, my oldest is 11, and she was like, I don't get it.
Okay.
And I was like, well, and I'm trying to explain it to her as we're talking. Yeah. And she's like, well, I guess so, but why is this happening? I was like, well, they haven't said why. She's like, well, then that doesn't really make sense. And that question or that statement really resonated, because it's like, yeah, like it's one thing to have mystery, but you need to have some context, because the main question of a mystery should be like, what is happening with X? Mm-hmm. Who is doing X? There should be some specificity to those questions. And I feel like those first initial episodes, there was no specific question except for like, what the hell is happening?
Right.
Which is kind of like lost towards the end there. It's like, what's going on? That doesn't make sense.
Right.
But altogether, it was like, oh, this is a really gripping pilot, because there's enough little Easter eggs for, again, for a hardcore comic nerd, like in the very first episode at the very end when you see the hand on the TV screen.
Right.
And you're like, oh, what's happening? And there's a sword logo. I recognize the sword logo right away, but because I'm a huge comic nerd, so I know sword. And I don't think they mentioned sword by name until episode 4 or 5.
Right.
And so, again, my wife is like, what? Why are they doing this in black and white? Like, what happens? Like, well, they haven't explained it yet. She's like, I'm out. I'm done.
I appreciate all of that feedback, because my initial response, because I've watched it and I don't have anyone in my circle who isn't a big geek who's watched it. So I was going to say I was going to give it a 4.5, and I'll tell you why in a second. But I do appreciate the feedback of your family who have not watched it, because I told one of my friends who, you know, is not a huge geek but knows bits and pieces of it. So I had told her that she would be okay watching it, because I'll fill her in on anything that's all the Easter eggs. But I made it akin to Guardians of the Galaxy, that a lot of people didn't know the background. So I felt like it's more of just watch it as a mystery, and it was okay that you didn't know all the deep dives about all these characters. It'll come up later, because I do think that it's easier if you know who all the characters are, because after a while you get characters that are basically we haven't seen since the second Thor movie, or characters that we haven't seen since Ant-Man and the Wasp, or characters that we haven't, you know, that are really homages to a character that was that's now grown up, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
Captain
it's different.
Marvel, right?
Right. Yeah. And so it's a Captain Marvel reference, but it's a whole different actor, and all these years have passed. And that's what I liked about it, is that I felt that because it's new-ish characters, it gives you a chance to really dive in without feeling like you have to go watch all the other movies, because they were little pieces of stuff. I also like that it made one of the movies that most people really didn't like, Avengers Age of Ultron, important. Because that's basically the origin story for Wanda and Vision. So now it makes something that we all kind of went meh and threw it away worthwhile. And so I liked that. And the thing that I liked best about the series is, especially since this is the first one that we're going to get of all of the Disney Plus series, and they told us they were going to be important. And as someone that really tried to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then it would get complicated and I'd fall off, I did think that this gave me hope for the way that they have planned for it to work into the franchise. And it made me go, this is why some things should be series and not movies. Because it really did give us the opportunity to know so much about those characters. And I liked that, that it was building and a case study in grief and mental health challenges and those things. And really thinking about the fact that these side characters, there's all these reasons why they were impacted. Like, you know, the fact that we just yada yada'd everything that happened to Wanda Maximoff for decades, and it's right. Like, whoa, that sucked. That sucked, and then this other thing happened to you that sucked, and then you this, and then we just kept telling you to show up and do the job. Okay, well, that's the worst, and that we just kind of, we knew when we watched her interaction with Vision in the Avengers movies how sad that was supposed to feel, but now thinking, well, you're right, that wouldn't be acceptable. Or you wouldn't expect a friend to just get over it and be able to deal with it when you went through that. Basically, you are the one that causes the demise of the person you love, and then it gets rewound and you got to watch it all over again. Of course you're not okay. And we're just like, be okay. So I liked that concept of what the MCU is doing with the series. So that's probably why I gave it such a high mark. Is that I appreciate that and the way that they are rounding out some characters, but I do understand what you're saying about for people who don't know who all these characters, maybe they didn't give us enough to make you emotionally invested in them. Is that what your family kind of thought, Taylor?
Just that pilot episode, the very first one, we really don't get any backstory. Mm-hmm. We're sort of like honeymooners, I Love Lucy-esque era, and this is what's happening. And there's that one weird scene at the dinner table, and then that's it. Like, right. That's the episode. So if it was like a pilot, mm-hmm. and said, what's the show about? You're like, oh, well, it's kind of like a weird take on 50s TV with superheroes. It doesn't really have a connection, which is fine. But when you add the second episode as like the middle bridge, like watching them back to back, then it's like, okay, so now we're moving through different genres, mm-hmm. and there's weirder stuff happening. And we're getting like, there's the helicopter in the first episode, the beekeeper in the second episode, and that symbol keeps popping up.
Right.
Like, oh, okay, something weird is happening. And especially when you bookend it with that third episode, watching all three together, which is only an hour really, because they're about 20 minutes plus right. 8-9 minutes of credits. Then it's like, this is a really strong pilot. This is really gripping, whether or not you have any knowledge of the characters at all. And that's how I liked it. That's why, again, it's more about the format, mm-hmm. and not the content. Because Olsen quietly, like, who knew, watching all those movies, what has been 22 films, whatever, right. she jumped in back in Ultron, that she was like the powerhouse, like the actor's actor. Like, mm-hmm. she nailed like the cadence of the speech, the mannerisms for every different genre, while keeping that undercurrent of right. like, I'm also the Scarlet Witch this whole time. And the fact that she can flip back and forth in the scenes where she has to like be real for a second, like when she comes outside, I don't remember which episode, so this might be a spoiler, but when she leaves the hex field and she's talking right. to the Duke of the Sword, it's like, oh, there's Scarlet Witch, like,
right,
she's not,
and she has
around.
A hint of that accent again all of a sudden. Yeah. Where it's like, I agree with you that I think she has done a fantastic job. I really like so many of the other actors have just really shown such amazing depth, you know, where they can just have one comment come out and you're like, wow, they really they really, you know, that I felt that. You know, you feel the growth of some of the characters. The fact that they gave, I believe it's Randall Park. Like, you really have learned so much more about him as an actor, where you're like, you know, the fact that we, a lot of the comments we're getting is, give X a show, give Y a show, this, that. Yes, you know, I forgot that Elizabeth was part of the old, you know, the younger sister of the Olsen twins. Forget those twins. We only care about this. Like, because I agree with you that it really is just a phenomenally broad world that they managed to do in this one. That's all about this town. And it's like, even watching the secondary characters that were like, are they in pain? Are they captured? Are we what? They're really, you know, it's an emotionally jarring show in spots. And then it goes back to the you know, is this, you know, where are we and what are we doing?
Well, I think to your point, Marvel films as much, and I like the MCU. I'm a Marvel fanboy, love the comics, love the movies, mm-hmm. all of them. If you really look at all the characters, with the exception of, like, starting with Black Panther, and that was, what, 2017, 2018?
Right.
Up to that point, so for a decade, you really had the Marx Brothers. Every single Marvel character, especially the leads, they were quip factories. Now, some were funnier than others. Some were more right. sarcastic and snarky. But there wasn't the depth. Like, they were sad when something bad happened, but then they'd turn around with a quip. And it was, right. especially the Avengers films, that was just sort of like sitting with a bunch of improv performers. Like, everyone's trying to be who's the sassiest, who's the snarkiest.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it's like, we get T'Challa gets to have some real depth. And then with Thor Ragnarok, we get to see some real depth. And now with WandaVision, we're like, oh, we can actually have them do stuff that's not funny. Like, she can be hurt and just be hurt without having like a sassy one-liner. She can right. just feel it. And everyone can react to it. Because even that, like in the MCU, someone's like, oh, I'm so sad, or they have something bad happen. Then some other character comes along and then they've got the one-liner. And it's right. kind of like, it's okay to have a part where like people aren't laughing. And right. with the series, they're definitely getting that. Now, they shouldn't go too far, because Marvel found out the hard way with the Inhuman series and those early seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where it's like, well, someone should be kind of funny. It's not all doom and gloom. Like, damn.
Right. Like, if they go a little too far, you're like, well, how did we get here? Like, I think that it's just different with this particular series, where it doesn't have to be a laugh a minute, but, you know, there's a reason why we find these shows engaging but also entertaining. And I think that that's something that we expect from this particular property, is that you do want entertainment. Versus we can't, or I don't think that as a Marvel fan, I'm not looking for dark just for dark's sake. I understand that something might happen, and it makes those moments, I think, even much more, you know, choice, where you're like, oh, well, this is when it got quote unquote real. So I appreciate that. So we're going to stick with it. So nobody's so upset with the series that you're like, I'm done. I'm not trying to get to the last few. Like, okay.
We'll see what happens in the next. How many? I don't even know this, but how many episodes are for season one?
Was it supposed to be just nine?
Just nine. And I think the last two are going to be extended versions, because we have a lot to cover. So the first ones were like that 20, 30 minute. You know, they've each gotten a little bit longer. And I think the last ones are closer to an hour, I believe. That's what I read. Which would make sense, because they're still, back to Taylor, your Lost comment, they're still as fans, we think it could go this direction, but there's a lot of variation on what it is. Like, even with some of the characters revealed to be different than what they were, I do think it's also doing what they said it was going to do, which is rarely really open things up to the multiverse and what we're going to get out of Doctor Strange. Yes. And at first I was like, whatever, you said that, but we'll see. But it does seem to be like, nope, we're setting this up. Weirdness happens, and that's where we live in a world where weirdness happens. So I'm good with that. I'm very good with that.
Marvel's like this, they have like this Jedi Grandmaster skill level of mm-hmm. doing cliffhangers and leading fans to a point, but then not giving them anything at all. And then completely, completely blindsiding in the best possible way, though. Because even the multiverse, like, they were hinting at that in like Spider-Man Far From Home.
Right.
Because, yeah, it turned out, spoilers, that Mephisto was lying, mm-hmm. or not Mysterio was lying. Mm-hmm. But S.H.I.E.L.D. had all that data up. Like, oh, okay, so he was not actually Mysterio, but all his research about the multiverse, that actually is true. And then the right. same thing we saw with Dormammu way back in Doctor Strange. And then the fact that it's like, oh, the three big character reveals from episode 6 and 7, it's like, well, that could mean this, that could mean this, that could mean this. There's a question of who's this guy that keeps getting referenced. And there's all these fan theories like, oh, we're going to get these characters. This is how they're going to be introduced to the MCU. Or maybe that's how they're going to bring these people into the MCU. And it's because I can't think of any other, not just like property, but any studio, any writer that has that, I mean, it's like Hitchcock, where you have no idea, you know, something's going to happen and you're excited to see what it is, but you have no idea what it would be because there's a million possibilities and every single one of those possibilities would be pretty decent.
Right.
It seems feasible and it would be exciting. And
well, well, Taylor, I'm excited for you to tell us about your most recent book. I know that I took you on a long road to be able to talk to you about your book because I wanted to talk about some other stuff first. But please tell us about your most recent book.
Oh, it's good that we took the scenic route because that kind of that fits in. I finally got a little, there we go.
Nice. Okay.
So it's the mixtape. It's my first collection of like shorts or whatever. And it, the whole thing is like earlier I mentioned, like I write just because I enjoy it. Now, I love the fact that other people, you know, knock on wood and everything, have seemed to enjoy some of it too. But I'm my first, I'm my most important fan. I'm the first person I have to write. Like if I don't like it, I'm not going to put it out or share it. And there's lots of things I was wanting to try. Like I love Edgar Allan Poe. He was probably the first writer I became a fanboy of. And as far as I know, I'd never seen poetry dealing specifically with spec fic or science fiction. So I was like, I'm gonna throw in a science fiction poem. I love the epistolary style of writing, which is like writing the style of letters, like Go Ask Alice, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, Flowers for Algernon, the whole where the whole thing's told in kind of like a diary format or via correspondence. And there's some sci-fi novels that have done it, but I've never seen one from the point of view of the person suffering and having no control over it. It's usually narrative. So it's like, what would actually happen if, so that's the title track, the title story, title track, Rod Steendale Claus. It's like, all right, here's someone who is trying to do something where they're transferring their consciousness in order for deep space travel. And then it's like, well, what if they get lost and they end up inverting it and they can also traverse space and time. So now they're traveling through time, but they have no control over it. But every so often they get lucky enough, they get to a place where they can come back and write these emails, these electronic correspondents trying to explain what's happening and how to help them, right, but they don't have control over it. And then with that format, it's really easy compared to the traditional, for me, compared to the traditional, like writing the outline with the plot points and going back, fleshing into drafts and rewriting the drafts over and over again, where I can write as correspondents. And if it feels kind of funky, it's like, well, that's what my emails sound like. That's what my Facebook messages and text messages are. They're not super great. Sometimes the grammar is not perfect. And most of that's intentional, I should say.
Taylor, can I just please tell you, I just love the way your brain works, and that the variety and all of the different, the library that you've created of work, and that there's such a intentional bent to your creation and why you decide to write what you write. I'm just amazed. And I think it just watching you, it just is always fascinating to me the way that you go, here's how come I made this.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, a lot of it's just, again, that restlessness, that energy. Because I'm like, I think this would be cool. I have one in here that's a dialogue. And okay, it's probably the one I'm the most concerned about because it started as a draft for, I had ambitions to do a short film.
Yes.
But I also love Douglas Adams, and there's not a lot of genuinely funny sci-fi. Like, there is sci-fi that has a lot of funny elements, and there are some comedies that are put in sci-fi settings or environments, but they're still definitely comedies. But I love things like Red Dwarf, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where it is a really nice blend of both comedic and sci-fi. Like, it doesn't really skimp on either side. I wasn't going to try and write an entire thing, but I was like, I can do a short film like this. And then I was like, this is not going to happen because there's a lot more involved in short films than short stories. So I was like, I'm gonna take the dialogue and try and punch it. And so even that, I was like, this is just funny. And that is a callback to a theme that I'm just obsessed with, because in so much of the stuff that we like, genre fiction, sci-fi, comic books, there's always this question of saving the world.
Right.
Like, the chosen one's gotta save the world. And 99.9% of the time, they, not only do they do it, they want to do it.
Right.
They might hesitate, especially if it's a trilogy. That means second film, they don't want to do it anymore. but they always eventually like, you know what? It's because I'm Spider-Man. This is who I am with great power, yada, yada.
Right.
I like the idea of like, you know, if someone, because if someone came to me and was like, hey, you're the only one that can save us, like, you got the wrong dude, man. Like, you want me to what? Oh, no, no. What are the odds? Oh, what? No, it's crazy. Bye.
You remind me of the lead character in Avenue 5. you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. It's an HBO show. I think it's brilliant, but it's that
Laurie.
Hugh Laurie is amazing. But he's that character. He's like, everybody wants him to be the savior. He was like, F this. I am not. Oh, nope. go pick somebody else. Nope, not me. I don't know what I'm doing. I thought I was supposed to fake it.
I'm an actor.
I'm a hired actor for this. Right. I love it.
So good.
Well, why don't we, Jayton, I think that we could help make this happen. Whenever one of our friends says, hey, I was going to make a short film and then they decided it was too much work, then I remind them what you and I do.
Yep, totally. That's
so,
what we do.
Yeah. So if you want this, I think we could get this done.
See, the tricky part. So I have a proof of concept and a spec script.
Right.
Which, because of short film shortcomings, I was talking to theater friends about, we should do it as a stage play, which is whatever. But I like the idea because it's literally dialogue. It's not My Dinner with Andre, because that's super dry. Great film, fantastic film, but kind of dry. It is about a conversation. But because the entirety of, it's called Hesitant Envoy, that's the piece. And it is just this representative from an intergalactic auditing agency is like, hey, you humans have messed up, man. Earth needs to get its act together. You got to tell us why so I can go back and buy you some time. And of course, the envoy is like, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, you made good points. Like, everything you're saying is kind of spot on. It's like, maybe we shouldn't be here. Like,
right. Just,
to the point that then it flips where the representative, the auditor, is actually trying to convince the envoy, like, no, you got to say something. You got to save yourself. And it's like, I got nothing. Like, maybe we could, can we get rid of just bigots? It's like, you know, most people have a little bigotry. I was like, oh, that's pretty bad. I guess we're sorry. But I love
everything
the idea of this dialogue.
Fantastic.
Being shot like an action movie, though.
Yeah.
Like, remember Darren Aronofsky when he did, was it Requiem for a Dream?
Yes.
And everyone was blown away when they'd show the users because it was sort of like 1,000 cuts or whatever, just to have like Jared Leto putting a needle in his arm. It's like, oh, you get the pupils dilate and there's blood flowing. There's this. But he really, you think about it, like, he just stuck him. He's like, you know, shooting up. That's not, but he shot it so compelling.
Right.
Taylor.
We're like, oh. So I think it'll be really funny to shoot this ridiculous premise of like an alien auditor and this like,
and we owe you. I mean, anybody, like... yeah, anybody who knows Taylor and I, like, Taylor was a supervising producer in my Comedy Through the Chaos series. So Taylor, this is my job. I'll be your supervising producer. We have an executive producer in Jayton. We already have photographers who have made short films because we already know Ellie Drews. You know all the people, and she made an action movie actually for her. The short film that she and her partner made was a movie about lady boxers. So we know all the fight choreographers. We could get this done if you needed that. We could get this done.
I mean, that would be a dream.
And you happen to be friends with the executive director of a film festival.
But Twin Cities, that's like I have friends who submitted to like the Oscars so
right.
often
we'll
for their short
next.
Films.
Yes.
So often that they know people now and like
right.
they're part of the Academy. But like just because I know them doesn't mean I'm like Oscar worthy. Like Jayton is like here. Like we were at the Twin Cities Film Festival a few years back and I remember chatting with him outside and my buddy Lolly was with me.
Yeah.
And she's like, he's like the king of Hollywood, but in Minnesota. I was like, I know, right? He's like, that's the coolest dude. Because she's like, when you said, can you come with me? I thought I was going to be like these film nerds, people like you. Like, that guy's really cool. It's like, I always know.
You are always invited. You're always invited, Taylor. And Taylor, okay, I want to make sure that we have, give your website again, all your social media. Tell us how we can get your book. And then I will take the harassment of getting this actually turned into a short film. I will take that offline and bug you about that later. So tell them how
Absolutely.
To get Rod String Nail Cloth.
Yes, so Rod String Nail Cloth is available right now at Amazon. In a bunch of countries and a handful of local places. Like you can ask a local as in Twin Cities, like Moon Palace Books. They do a lot of good ordering. Still trying to work on Black Garnet. So if you know anybody at Black Garnet Books that's looking for some local authors, like I would be down. They're the first Black bookstore, only Black bookstore, I think, in the Twin Cities. So it'd be really cool to get there. But otherwise, you can find it on Amazon or just check out my author site, which is blkintl.com. It's like Black Intellectual.
With most of the
except for the one.
Taylor, I adore you. I am always so happy when you join us. I'm sure we'll have lots of reasons to have you come on again. And so it might be as soon as us doing a recap over WandaVision and getting ready for everything starting. So the Winter Soldier show is coming out soon. We're gonna have Loki coming out soon. We're finally gonna get Black Widow. Lots of things that we're gonna be able to talk about and coming directly to everybody's flat screens. So So we'll do that. You can find all the information about Be Our Geek. If you want to email us, get in contact with us, you can go to the Twin Cities Film Fest website, which is twincitiesfilmfest.org. You can find Be Our Geek on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at beourgeekshow@gmail.com. And feel free to leave us a message if you like. You can call us at 612-276-2774. Taylor, you are definitely my favorite returning geek on this show. Aww. Don't tell anybody else that because I don't want them to think I pick favorites. But Jayton, did I miss anything? Can you think of anything else we need to cover today?
No, and I certainly want to have Taylor back, and I want to do a revisit on the entirety of the show. And I wouldn't mind watching the whole show from beginning to the end, okay, all in one sitting, because I think that in itself would be a fascinating story stitched together in almost a 2.5-3 hour movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, depending on how many seasons, like, I don't know how the extended episodes are going to be, how long, but
right. That
said, I certainly want to have that conversation again. No, I think Taylor, thank you so much for your geekdom. And again, you're such a, I could talk to you again. Shannon's already mentioned this. We could talk to you about anything and everything and be fascinated. So, sooner than later, we should have you back on. And then next time you tell us what you want to talk about and maybe invigorate our minds and introduce us to something that you're geeking out about that perhaps we're not.
Absolutely. I would love to do that. Thank you for having me. I love coming here. Like, Shannon, same thing. You and Jayton are like my favorite podcasters. I don't really listen to podcasts that much, just a handful, because, and I hate to be that guy, but like, I was listening to podcasts back in like 2003, 2004. And then that's when they were still weird. And people were like, what are you listening to? That's dumb. And then my wife especially, she's like, oh, I remember even saying, I want to start a podcast. And she's like, you're going to be one of those weird guys with a microphone in the basement. And then you just jump forward. Now, there's a billion podcasts?
Right.
Like, that would be a fun one to talk about. Like, why are there only, with a handful of exceptions, Be Our Geek included, it seems like there's really only three podcasts. There's like the where they talk really close to the mic, very slowly and very quietly. And you got the one that's really far from the mic. There's like eight dudes in the room all yelling and screaming at each other. And then the one where it's like someone who thinks they're a lot cooler than they are, a lot more knowledgeable than they are. So they'll do like a rewatch. And they're like, okay, we're going to watch all the episodes of Magnum PI. Like, strap in. It's like, this isn't as interesting as you think it is.
Well, thank you for not saying that we drop into all of those tropes. I appreciate that. This is going to be fun. So we have a number of homework assignments, so we'll make sure that we pick one of them, and we'll have you on again very soon, Taylor. Again, I want to remind everybody they can find us wherever they find their favorite podcast. So please like and subscribe to Be Our Geek. We'll see everybody again soon. We appreciate you being part of the show, because everyone is a geek about something.